First case for today, 11 AP 1158, Showers Appraisals versus Musson Brothers, Inc. I have the following schedule, and that is 25 minutes for Daniel J. Posansky, representing Showers Appraisals, 15 minutes for David G. Dudas, representing Musson Brothers, 15 minutes for Attorney Bree A. Madison, representing the City of Oshkosh, and 5 minutes for Mr. Posansky in rebuttal. Is that correct? All right. We'll proceed with that calendar. Attorney Posansky, your turn.
Justices, may it please the Court. My name is Attorney Daniel Posansky. I'm of the Dempsey Law Firm from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Also at counsel table is Attorney Jerry Medina of our firm. I represent the plaintiffs.
It might be helpful, yes. You raise the podium. Notice how deftly he does that, because some of you are going to have to lower that podium.
Thank you, Your Honor. I represent the plaintiffs, petitioners, Showers Appraisals, LLC, Real Marketing, LLC, and Mark W. Showers. Mr. Showers is also in the chambers today. This is not a case about the rains that occurred in Oshkosh, Wisconsin in June of 2008. The issue before this court is whether to provide blanket immunity to all governmental contractors, as decided by the Court of Appeals in this case. Before the Court of Appeals decision, there was the Lyons test, which provided that independent contractors are provided immunity for certain tasks where the contractor lacks the discretion in the performance of those tasks. The majority at the Court of Appeals granted immunity for discretionary acts, namely the means and methods of construction. Musson reconstructed Ohio Street in the City of Oshkosh in 2008. A large rainstorm occurred on June 12th of 2008. 117,500 gallons of water estimated pooled up outside of Mr. Shower's business located along Ohio Street in the City of Oshkosh. The gravamen of this is that the water sat there for 15 to 18 hours with no place to go, causing his basement to rupture and causing $140,000 of damages to his basement. These were uninsured costs that he had. Accordingly, Mr. Showers filed a suit against Musson in the Winnebago County Circuit Court, and the court dismissed the action against Musson and the City of Oshkosh based upon Wisconsin Statute 893.80, which is Wisconsin's governmental immunity statute. It is the position of the plaintiff's appellants that Musson is not an agent of the state of Wisconsin. When an independent contractor is not controlled by the state, the private contractor is subject to liability, like all other contractors doing work for any other private citizens. The issue then is whether or not they met the standard of care. We want to make Mr. Showers wants the court to know that this is not Mr. Showers trying to provide a hindsight critique of what Musson could have done better. The main issues before this court are as follows. Was the decision to remove the entire storm sewer block by block, rather than doing it block by block, as was agreed upon by the parties, did that create a reasonably precise specification? And it is the position of Mr. Showers that the block by block by removal of the storm sewer was not a reasonably precise specification. And in the brief of Musson Brothers, they take no position whatsoever on that, indicating whether or not they believe it's precise or not precise. And we believe then that is an admission that it is not a reasonably precise specification.
Well, if they're independent contracts, why are we worrying about whether or not it's precise or not precise? Doesn't that go to whether they're agents and are immune?
Well, the issue of an agent, whether or not it's precise or not precise, is the key question. If it's not a precise specification, then we have to look whether or not there was any governmental approval of that specification. Now, what this court is being asked to decide is this. If there's a discretionary decision, which this case is being done, in a contract, it clearly states that Musson Brothers is responsible for the means and methods of construction. In fact, the contract says that they should be responsible for any damages or to property or injury to persons occurring through their own negligence or that of their employees in incident to the performance of work under this contract pursuant to the standard specification. So they signed a contract saying that they are responsible for their negligence. And I submit to this court that the reason that is in there is because of the Lyons test. Basically, the DOT was saying to Muslim Brothers, if you are negligent here, you're going to be responsible for their actions. Now we have a situation where an agent who is exercising complete discretion over the means and methods of construction, they are found to be immune. And now what I want the court to know is that negligence is the standard we presume. We presume negligence in contractor immunity cases. We presume that the contractor was negligent. The exception is immunity. In order to get immunity, the contractor needs to prove that there is a specification that they provided to the government, and that government essentially approved that specification.
Counsel, I'm missing something, so you're going to help me. Why is the focus of the reasonably precise specification, as you advance that it is the specification to rip out the storm sewer block by block. But as I understand the facts, Moosen decided to rip out the entire storm sewer all at once rather than block by block. So why are we focusing on the block by block as being the reasonably precise specification? How in the analysis is that of any import if it is agreed that the facts are that they didn't follow that anyway?
And I think we have to look at this, that we need to apply three separate Lyons tests. This court is going to have to do that. The three separate tests. One, was the block by block decision discretionary or not? We believe it was discretionary. Two, was the failure to maintain temporary drainage during construction, was that a reasonably precise specification? We submit it is not. So another Lyons test will need to be done. And the last issue is whether or not the contingency pumping plan was a reasonably precise specification. And we submit that it is not a reasonably precise specification. And once again, a Lyons analysis will be needed to done for each one of those. Now, with respect to the block by block, Musson is an outside the contract decision that was made. At the time of the pre-construction meetings, the parties all sat down, and the record is very clear. There's no dispute that everybody sat down and said, Musson Brothers, the best way to do this is on a block-by-block basis, because if you remove the whole entire storm system on a very long length of road in the city of Oshkosh, there's going to be nowhere for that water to go. The best way is block-by-block. Musson, in its discretion, and the reason the discretion is important is because that governmental contractor cannot have immunity for its own discretionary decisions. That is our position. And that's what the legislature, when it enacted 893.80, did not intend for contractors to have immunity for the discretionary decisions. Now, there really hasn't been cases in the state of Wisconsin have addressed this issue directly on. And where we look to for guidance in this is namely from a lot of cases in courts throughout the country, basically federal cases.
Let me interject. I guess it's a matter of emphasis. Since you have the three-part test in Lyons that I think, and the first part of the test is there a reasonably precise specification? Okay, you're focusing on block, block, block. But the second part that falls right after that is, did the contractor conform to that? And it's, I thought it's agreed upon that they didn't do block by block.
Yeah, the key is the Lyons analysis. It starts up at the top here, and it divides into two parts. If it's reasonably precise, then we go into step one and step two, with step two is the conformity. If it is discretionary, though, then we go on to the other side. It's the second part. It's a different analysis. An analysis, if it's discretionary, then Musson must prove that the government approved that decision, their discretionary decision. That's the difference. If it is reasonably precise, then we go down the other line of analysis, and then we go whether it conformed or not. We believe that the block by block was not reasonably precise, so therefore we're going down the left-hand side or to this side of the analysis, And the Court of Appeals came back and said, well, because there was a governmental contractor on site, or governmental agent on site, which was hired by the DOT to be there, because that person was simply there, that person has approved that discretionary decision. And that's what this court is being challenged to decide, whether or not that approval, simply being there, the mere presence of that person being there, is approving their discretionary decision. And our position is that that result is going to have catastrophic effects throughout the state. Namely,
some questions about the facts here. What was the length of this project?
Yes, it was basically a point, I believe it was a two-thirds of a mile project, 0.66 miles.
How many?
0.66 miles.
0.66.
I believe that's the amount.
How many blocks were involved?
I would say maybe 10 blocks.
Okay. Now, the project, I believe, required that all of the street be torn up. Is that right? And
the project, I mean, at some point the street had to be all, obviously they needed to take all the storm sewer out of the entire length of the project, okay? And the issue is, I mean, I think if I understand where you're going on this, is what had to happen anyways. They had to take out the storm sewer. What is the big deal about taking out the whole thing versus block by block? Is that where I'm understanding?
Well, we might go there, yes. I mean, the specifications were, I imagine, that you had to take out the whole 0.66 miles of street some way. Is that right?
The specifications did not specifically say that. I mean, the specifications we're speaking of, and this, I think, a key distinction, which was kind of maybe muddied at the lower levels, is the specifications we're talking to, there's plans which have, you know, that concept you have, and then there's standard specifications that talk about ideals or objectives that the DOT wants. In the actual plans, certainly they're going to have to rip up the entire road, but it does not say in those plans at all how to do that, whether it's block by block or do the whole thing. What the contract does says is we've hired this professional contracting firm who knows how to do this. If you think it's best to do, you know, block by block or whatever, or block by block or the whole thing once, that's up to you. But we believe, they sat down in the meeting and they said, we believe this contract, the best way to do it is block by block because of the fact that the water is going to have nowhere to go. They blocked off the storm. The water basically flows into the Fox River in the city of Oshkosh, and there was nowhere for that water to go. And that's what happened here. The entire lifeline down Ohio Street was gone and had nowhere to go, and therefore the water pulled up like it did. But I guess MUSA needs to prove to this court that there was a specification that they took to the DOT and said to the DOT that we want you to approve the specification. They're trying to put the burden on my client to say that you have the duty to prove immunity. We don't. We have the duty to come to this court. We presume negligence. They want to get out of negligence and not want to go to a jury trial. They need to prove to the court that what the specification is. And in their briefs, they have not cited to one specification which they believe that the DOT approved on their behalf or that was reasonably precise. They make blanket generalizations that all the specifications were approved and approved by the DOT. That's not what we need. That's not what the intent of Lyons is. Lyons does not want to give immunity to discretionary decisions.
Well, let me just double back for a moment. We got roughly 9 or 10 blocks, a little over half a mile, in there to put in a new sewer, right? Storm sewer?
Correct.
All right. As I read your briefs, you had two arguments. One, Lyons. You went through the three steps, okay?
Correct.
Your second argument is that Musson had a ministerial duty to maintain proper drainage. Ministerial, not discretionary. Is that right?
Yes. This is the way the Lyons analysis goes. And it's, I'll be honest, it's taken me Now it's 5 years going on this case, and it's taken a long time to get my hands around it, but this is the understanding I have pretty well right now, is that whenever we have the right and left analysis, we go down to the right, and that's where we have reasonably precise. If it's reasonably precise, then we check whether it conformed or not. If the specification was reasonably precise and mustn't conformed and did what they were supposed to pursue with that specification, then they potentially get immunity. And if there is immunity, then our argument is, if the court finds immunity, there's an exception to immunity that says if that Musson had a duty to maintain drainage pursuant to the cases we've cited, the Menick case and the Milwaukee Metropolitan case, where they say that municipalities have a duty to maintain drainage. And the Court of Appeals came back and said, well, because Musson was in the process of reconstructing the street, they don't have a duty to maintain drainage. So basically, that Mr. Showers would be hung out to dry and not have any recourse against the city or the Musson brothers. But once again, I want to emphasize that this court in 1961, in the Hollitz decision, abrogated governmental immunity. Governmental immunity has gone back in this state and gone back in this country, back to England, when the kings and queens of England had immunity, and it continued on for many years, was adopted in, I think, 1863 in the city of Oshkosh versus Hayes' case in Wisconsin. And until 1961, we had immunity. And in 1961, this court said, we don't like governmental immunity. We're going to abrogate it and basically get rid of it. And then in 1963, the court or the legislature came back and adopted 893.80. But in that the 1961 case from this court, the court made it very linear as to what it believed the rule should be for governmental immunity. He said, if the legislator wants to enact a law, they can do so and say that it's if a governmental employee or agent or an employee or agent is acting in a discretionary function regarding its judicial or quasi-judicial functions, then they can get immunity. They adopted that exact language from this court into the 893.80. My message is that I think governmental immunity, including contractor government immunity, has gone very broad. And now with respect to contractor governmental immunity, is extremely broad. Not only does the contractor get immunity for following reasonably precise specifications, but if they're exercising their own discretion as to what they want to do, they get this discretion. And the problem with that is this. There's some cases that I got from the federal circuits which talk about this issue. And one example they gave was this, is if a governmental contractor is in a building, in a government building, installing a new elevator, and the government official who's hired them to do this walks by, sees what they're doing, doesn't really approve what they did, but walks by and sees what they're doing, and that elevator cable snaps, and somebody is hurt in that elevator crash, there would be no recourse against the contractor if governmental immunity is so broad as to offer them immunity for their discretionary decisions. What that case said is there has to be meaningful oversight and substantive review of the decision of the government before a discretionary decision can have immunity. And what I mean by that is, in these cases, it's usually where a government airplane or machinery has an explosion or something catastrophic happens, and they go after the contractor for this, and the contractor basically says governmental immunity. And they go through an analysis as to what oversight the government had on this. And if the government doesn't have extensive review and analysis, it's got to be a lot. It's got to be, for example, in the Braunfield decision, there was a 250-page manual in the state of Wisconsin here that was used by Wisconsin Rapids City, where in that manual, they told them precisely what they wanted to do, and the city engineer took the proposed plan from the contractor, approved it, revised it, and gave it back to them. That's the type of oversight we need. We need these to be meaningful review and analysis. So we're in a situation where we believe there's, once again, three levels of analysis for this court, three separate times on the Lyons test, and we believe in all three of those instances there is not governmental immunity because of the fact that they are not reasonably precise. There was discretionary decisions which were afforded to Musson Brothers by the contract.
What is your best argument for the proposition that Musson is not an agent within the meaning of 893.80?
The best and the simplest argument I'll give you is there is no control. Control is necessary. When an agent, there is a principal-agent relationship, there is a need to be a level of control. Control is basically controlling the means, the modes, and the methods of what that agent does. And if that does happen in that situation, then the agent would become a principal-agent relationship and therefore potentially have immunity. Now, in our situation, it has to be, once again, a reasonably precise specification. We have to find that specification first. I want to emphasize that you have to come back to that. But my best argument to answer your question yet is that there's no control. We've got to have the control to have that. We just can't have somebody who's out on their own doing whatever they want and to say they're an agent of the state. The state intentionally does not want them to be an agent, and the reason being is because this contract, they're saying that they go out and get insurance, and if something happens to a good and virtuous citizen because of the negligence of the contractor, they can go after that the contractor for that. Now we have a situation where when they're exercising discretion, can't go after the contractor, can't go over the after the government. We're not suing the state here. We're not going after the state of Wisconsin. We can't sue the state because they have immunity because they're exercising their discretion. So Mr. Showers is left with no insurance.
Here's
and no
my
recourse
problem.
Against anybody.
Here's my problem. In Lyons, the Court of Appeals said, what did they say? It said that it's a 893(80)(4) applies to officers, officials, agents, or employees. Furthermore, the rationale for providing such immunity also supports extending it to independent contractors who act at the direction of a state or municipal authority. We explain that the purpose in Gordon versus Milwaukee County, we explain that the purpose of this discretionary immunity was to insulate legislative policy decisions from judicial examination. We reason that the tort process was an inadequate crucible for testing the merits of choices made in the political arena. Thus, the language in 893(84) and the reasoning of Gordon demonstrate that the focus of our inquiry should be whether Strand was simply acting as an agent of government authorities who retained ultimate responsibility for the aspects of the bridge design. If this accurately describes the situation, then Strand should be immune, just as the state authorities would be. So sounds to me is that they have a kind of different definition of independent contractor and agent for purposes of 893(80). And they say who had the ultimate responsibility of the bridge design. Now here, there was a DOT person right at the scene, right?
He was at the scene, but he was not exercising any control. That is the distinct difference. In Lyons, it's very important to note that in Lyons, the government made the decision. They told the contractor, the issue was there was a bridge that had a vertical slope on the bridge that was too steep. And the contractor who designed the bridge said to the state, they said, I think this slope is going to cause an accident. And the DOT essentially came back and said, well, we don't want to, we'll have extra costs to redesign the intersection and to do this. So therefore, go forward and keep the design the way it is, and don't change it the way it is. So then somebody got injured at that intersection, and they brought suit against the engineer who designed the bridge. And the engineer said, governmental immunity. The government was controlling what I was doing. They told me that I should use this design, which I told them was faulty. It may cause injury. I should get immunity. So you can see that level of control that was over them and approval of a reasonably precise specification bridge design.
But that the Lyons didn't involve the negligent performance of a contract. Lyons just involved the design. And in fact, didn't the designer first design it with a lower slope and less vertical height? And the municipality didn't want to do that because then have to then reconstruct the roads into which the bridge would empty, and that was going to be more expensive. So they made a discretionary decision to change the design. But there wasn't an allegation about
in Lyons about actually negligently performing the work of building the bridge, correct?
No, the allegation was negligent design.
Designed
by the engineering firm.
Okay.
So, but once
but
again.
But here there's no negligent design that's at issue? Is that
no, there's
correct?
No negligent design. Basically, that the issue is that, once again, the block by block, it was a discretionary decision they made. And even if this court says it's not discretionary, the court says, well, we believe that was not a discretionary decision. That was a reasonably precise specification. Then, in that instance, Mr. Showers wins. There's no immunity because we go to the second prong of the analysis. Did they conform with that reasonably precise specification? The answer is no. They were supposed to do it block by block, and they removed the entire storm sewer system. So our position is that there's three lines analysis that needs to be done. We think unconditionally we will win on the issue of the first one on block by block because we don't think it was reasonably precise because they were exercising discretion and there was no government approval, meaningful oversight or approval of that decision. And because there wasn't, then there's no immunity because we never go to the other side of the analysis whether it was reasonably precise. What we're asking the court, yes, Justice?
At the opening of your remarks, you talked about some gallons of water.
Yes.
What was that figure?
It was estimated at 117,500 gallons of water in front of Mr. Schauer's property alone. So basically, it was a large bathtub of water.
How would you know that?
We had an engineer who was able, I would not know this, but we had an engineer who was sophisticated enough to do the measurements to figure out the depth of the hole, the length of the hole, and just basically measuring cubic feet of water.
Now, you talked about this project being 9 or 10 blocks long.
Correct.
Were there any other properties besides Mr. Schauer's property that were damaged because of this whole incident?
Along Ohio Street? I know, I don't have enough personal knowledge to know whether or not there's a lot of businesses located along Ohio Street. The reason Mr. Schauer's property is really unique, and I know one of their businesses had some water lower in their property, but Mr. Schauer's property is really unique because this is a situation where the sidewalk and his building pretty much butt right up against each other. It's not like there's a significant amount of real estate between them. And because of that, the pressure of that water sitting right next to his building forced the basement floor from underneath to rupture up and fill up his basement and into his business. So, and it was a brand new building that was built approximately 1 year before. And certainly, you know, the other businesses around town were much older. But I don't know. I know the residential properties were harmed around the city of Oshkosh. I mean, it was a storm that harmed people. We're not denying that, but we're not. Once again, the issue is, can we get the trial on this issue to present this case to a jury? And the only way that Musson can prove to this court that we can't go to a jury, if Mr. Dudas can say to this court that there are reasonably precise specifications, that they're reasonably precise, and our position is that they're not reasonably precise because they're discretionary. You can't get something precise pursuant to a discretionary decision. And I wanted to note.
So are you still responding to Justice Prosser's question?
I'm done, yes.
Okay. Then you are. Indeed, your red light is on, and you will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Okay?
Thank you.
Sure. David Dudas, counsel, do I understand that you're going to have 15 minutes? Okay. You may proceed, and the other 15 minutes will be Bree Madison. And tell us what you're going to be handling and what your assisting counsel will be handling, if you will, at the outset, counsel. When I say handling, I mean what issues you'll be addressing and what issues she'll be addressing. You may proceed.
Thank you. Justices, may it please this honorable court. Again, my name is Dave Dudas. I practice with the firm of McKenna, Dudas & Cooley out of Appleton. We represent Musson Brothers in this case. Thank you for taking the time today to hear us all. My client, first of all, with respect to dividing up the issues, we haven't actually done that, so I think we're both going to cover all of the issues, if that's all okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
My client, Musson Brothers, was hired by Wisconsin DOT to perform work on a job that was designed by the DOT, outsourced to an engineering firm, but Musson is not an engineering company, does not evaluate the drainage capabilities of the area. They're a construction company. That's their expertise. The DOT hired a professional engineer to design the project, and in conjunction with that engineer, made decisions as to what the plans would include and what the plans would not include. Musson had no input, but upon agreeing to perform the work, Musson is obligated by the contract to comply with all of the contract terms and provisions. It is important in this case to note that in addition to agreeing to this contract and all the plans and specifications, the DOT set up shop on site, not merely to maintain a presence, but to run the project. All day, every day, every minute, all day, every day of the project, there were at least one engineer from the DOT and two inspectors on site at all times. The affidavit of Mark Cornelius from Musson Brothers provides that.
Counselor, who decided that more storm sewer than just one block at a time would be taken out?
The government. That's what the plans and specifications provide.
And what did it say in the plans and specifications that more than one block of storm sewer should be taken out at the same time?
When the government designed this plan and decided what it was going to include or not include, it provided in the engineering plans to remove all of the pavement and remove all of the storm sewers. And it decided not to include a timetable for doing that. Those were all decisions by the DOT. So just
there's
as...
Just so I understand, there's nothing in the plans that either requires you, your client, to do it block by block or doesn't require them. It's just discretionary on how they implement the obligation to take out the storm source.
Right. With respect to whether or not that's a reasonably precise specification, in essence, who made that decision, it's our position that the DOT made that decision by agreeing to have the street, the entire street, removed, closed.
But the street isn't the problem. It's the storm sewers that are the problems, correct? And my question is focused on that, not on the street. And I don't want to misunderstand what you're telling me, but what I'm hearing you say is that the DOT didn't make any decision at all about whether all of the storm sewer, a part of the storm sewer, or how it should be taken out time-wise.
Actually, it's our position that the DOT did.
Okay, and what did they say?
The DOT made the decision, as the Court of Appeals has held in Braunfeld, a specification not to include something is just as precise as a specification to include something.
Well, it gives your client the discretion on how to execute the contract. That much I'll agree with you on.
No, well, with respect to the, if I could just talk about the storm sewers for a second, okay? But I did want to reference that the reasonably precise specifications we're relying on here, they're attached as an exhibit. I'm holding them in my hand to the affidavit of Mark Cornelius. It's the contract, the plans, the actual engineering drawings, all of the specifications, everything very detailed. And our affidavit and confirmation from the owner, the DOT, that we complied with these. Now, with respect...
Just so I'm understanding, I looked at that. I could not find a specification that said take it all out at once in regard to the storm sewer or take it only out block by block. I couldn't find anything that directed how that was to be done. Did I miss it?
Well, again, so the DOT spends years developing this design plan and in conjunction with the engineering firm making decisions about what's going to be done. So, yes, the DOT and that firm could have decided we'll go 10 feet at a time, a block at a time, or the entire road project length at a time.
Right, but they didn't make a decision about that.
Well, the specifications, the plan set forth removing the whole thing, and the DOT made the decision not to include a timetable on that.
Okay.
So with respect to the storm sewers, this is reasonably precise because not only did the DOT make that decision, that's the legislative decision or quasi-legislative decision or political choice that I believe is protected from judicial scrutiny. That's the decision that was made not to include a timetable, okay? And then with respect to removing the storm sewers, the DOT has evaluated the site, is familiar with the site, knows that the outfall of those storm sewers is below river level, so you can't proceed with the project unless you plug that off and render it useless. Because if you don't plug off the old storm sewer, then the project will flood with river water.
Right.
So that needs to be plugged off, and so there needs to be temporary drainage. Bypass pumping is essentially the only way to provide that. Now, the DOT is not only on site, but they know this. They see and evaluate that the entire road is taken up and that the storm sewer is plugged off and removed.
Is there only one exit from the storm sewer? This whole 9 blocks or whatever, is there only one exit?
Yes, I believe it's 7 or 8 blocks, and there is. There's one outfall for this particular basin.
Okay, so even if they took it block by block, they couldn't plug it off block by block and leave the rest hooked up? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, they block it, or they plug it off at the outfall, and then they pump as they lay new storm sewer.
Sure.
Then they can the amount of pumping they do may become lessened, but they still have to at the very end, even with a new storm sewer, pump it not into the old outfall, but into what they did is pumped it into a soccer field, essentially, and it drained into the river. But the DOT also knew that the sanitary sewers were being removed and replaced, and the sanitary sewers were below the storm sewers. So in order to do this job, you had to remove the storm sewers. And the DOT is there. They see that it's done in April, the entire month of April, the entire month of May, and the project proceeds. The DOT, not only did it have that decision in the plans and specifications not to include a timetable, but there on site, controlling every aspect of the job with the authority and power under the contract to intervene if there's noncompliance, if in other words, they believe that the contractor is not doing what the government decided, they have the power to intervene, and the project engineer, Mr. Schoenhofer, said, yes, I would, under oath, I would intervene if that contractor is doing something on the project that we, the government, did not want them to do, and he did not, with respect to the sewers or the roads.
Give me examples of what the contractor would be liable for under the specifications, because the specs seem to make room for the contractor to be liable. What kinds of things do you think that covers?
Well, the contractor would be liable if it's excavating and it hits a pipe that it's not supposed to hit.
But if DOT is there and monitoring what they're doing at all times, why wouldn't that be DOT's fault?
Because that's not a decision by the government. The government, in that scenario, hasn't decided by virtue of the contract or by virtue of directives on site to cause damage to that pipe that wasn't intended to be struck.
So on site, the government said, take out all the storm sewers at once.
Well, that's what the plans call for. The DOT is there, and yes, it's done.
Well, tell me exactly where the plans say, we, as part of this contract, we want you to take out all the storm sewers at once.
The provisions, the plans, the drawings, the design in this instance has everything removed.
Right.
Okay. So the,
eventually, that could be done at once, or it could be done step by step, right?
But the government, the DOT, made the decision not to include a timetable here.
They left that to your discretion, your client's. Would your client have been wrong if your client did it one part of the storm sewer at a time?
It wasn't practical. It really couldn't have been done that way because of the fact that there were sanitary sewers being replaced and given the outfall beneath. But if it were to proceed in that fashion, again, the DOT is on site to either approve it or reject it. The DOT can intervene, the DOT can reject any decision, and the DOT can stop the work. And there's actually a procedure in the contract for the DOT to do that.
So under your scenario, the DOT could stop them from digging and hitting the pipe. I don't see the circumstance under which your client, under your theory, is ever liable if they're doing a government contract.
Again, in the example I give, the DOT, if there's a negligent event that occurs, there's no notice to anyone that it's about to happen. It's impossible for anybody on site to prevent it. So if you have somebody digging.
Well, but immunity applies when you are negligent. So the definition can't be because it's a negligent event, there's no immunity. Immunity covers negligence. So you're missing a beat there for me. You don't get into immunity if there isn't a wrong that's done, whether it's intentional or negligent.
Right.
If there's immunity, negligence or not, you're immune. So it can't be whether there's negligence.
There's negligence presumed in the immunity test. That's right. But the immunity is only extended in the event of negligence where it's a decision by the DOT, in essence, either by not making a decision but then doing more than monitoring the project, deciding as the project is being performed that the work will proceed in a certain fashion.
Okay. I guess what I need you to, and I'm not going to hold you to keep answering my questions. My colleagues have questions too. But what you need to do for me is explain how it is that when the contract doesn't specify how you're to do something and it leaves to you to decide how to do something, how that is that you've been directed to do it only one way. Okay?
Okay. That, that again, is as in Braunfeld, where the court held that a plan that does not include something or does not set forth a specific item or type of work to be done can be just as precise, and that's how the government proceeded here. And in addition, you have genuine, meaningful oversight by the DOT, so it isn't the project proceeded the entire month of May, the entire month of April, and into June, with the DOT actually reviewing and evaluating that very issue, because the city had contacted Mr. Schoenhofer and asked about the fact that the contractor was doing more than block by block, and Mr. Schoenhofer said, yes, that's in accordance with the contract. So there was actual review and decision by the DOT to proceed in that fashion.
Counsel, there are such things as written contracts and unwritten contracts, and you were holding up this inch or inch and a half specifications. But both paragraph 5 of the majority opinion and paragraph 34 of the dissenting opinion speak of the unwritten contract between the state, the city, and your client. That is, the majority acknowledges, I'm reading from paragraph 34 of the dissent, the majority acknowledges that the state, the city of Oshkosh, and Musson all had a, quote, unwritten understanding, quote, that Musson would disconnect the storm sewer on a block-by-block basis. How does that unwritten understanding enter into your argument when you say there's no
written provision for block by block in the specifications?
My time is up. May
you may respond.
Thank you. That was altered. The decision was made to change that. There was never, again, nothing in the plans or specifications that had it set forth to be done on a block by block basis. And
does that appear? I mean, I take both paragraph 5 and paragraph 34 as an acknowledgement of a fact of the case, and I don't find you'll have to help me in finding in the opinion where it says, and subsequently they changed that unwritten understanding. I was just looking at the dissent. It's not there, but I don't recall seeing
it. Actually, it was presumably an understanding of somebody within the city of Oshkosh. They had a perception that it was going to be done a certain way. They were not a party to the contract. And there's some dispute in the case as to whether there was any such discussion or understanding at all. But in any event, the DOT acknowledged that this is the way we are proceeding on the project, and it complies with our decision. It complies with our plan.
Thank you, counsel. Are there any other questions? Is Ms. Madison, she's next. Counsel?
Please the court. My name is Bree Madison. I'm an attorney with Silton, Seifert, and Carlson in Appleton, and I'm here today representing the city of Oshkosh. I think the questions that have been asked here today demonstrate that this is the exact type of case that when the United States Supreme Court set forth the Boyle decision, and that was subsequently adopted by our courts in Lyons, this is the exact type of case that we want to insulate from liability. In Boyle, the court articulated that it doesn't make much sense to insulate the government from financial liability, but then not insulate from financial liability a contractor who's exercising judgment that, if exercised by the municipality, they wouldn't be.
The contractor can get indemnification or get insurance coverage.
Excuse me?
You can get insurance coverage, can't you? The contractor can get insurance coverage.
Sure, and they do. Mm-hmm. But with the Lyons decision provided immunity to contractors under certain circumstances when they do work for governmental entities under that governmental entity supervision, and that's exactly what we had here. Musson was just discussing the block by block versus doing the entire thing at once, and there isn't a provision in the contract that says Musson has to do it block by block or all at once. Musson is given a range of decisions that it may choose from among. The government has approved this range of decisions, and then they're on-site supervising, making sure that the decisions being made are within that range of decisions every day.
So give me an example of what your client would be responsible for, they could be sued for.
I'm sorry?
If the government is always there giving them a range of decisions and they're always performing in accordance with those decisions, are they always covered by immunity?
More often than not.
Even if they're negligent, of course, because immunity only really comes to fruition when there's a problem, right? So there's nothing for which they could be liable.
The example that I give is the type of pipe. If the contractor were to install a pipe, the DeFever case is a good example, where the state administrative code allows a range of installation depths for pipes, 5 to 7 feet. If the contractor were to install it at 4 or 8, there could be liability on the part of the contractor. but the government has approved reasonably precise specifications, which do, by their inherent nature, in order to allow for us to contract these things out, allow for some discretion on the part of the contractor. This was the project in Oshkosh was a very difficult project, as Mr. Dudas alluded, because the storm sewer outfall was below sea level. The decision was made to plug that up so that the trenches, the work being done, wasn't flooded with water. And one thing that I want to point out about the block-by-block method, as opposed to tearing it up all at once, the mechanism that Mr. Showers alleges damaged his property is this apparent bathtub effect, this hydrostatic pressure caused by water sitting in the excavated roadbed. So really the cause that's being alleged here is the excavation of the roadbed, not the storm sewer disconnection. If the project had been proceeding block by block and they were working on the block out in front of Mr. Shower's property on the day that this natural disaster hit, probably the same thing would have happened if we're accepting the facts, the mechanism, the cause as alleged by Showers is true. Whether it was block by block, whether the roadbeds that were called for being torn up were torn up all at once or not.
But that's a different defense than immunity. Whether it would have happened anyway is not, how relevant is that to the analysis of immunity?
Well, and the immunity analysis, we're supposed to be focusing on whether or not the act is entitled to immunity, the act that's supposedly performed negligently. And in this case, what ultimately we are talking about is drainage capacity, and that's something that has historically been treated as something for which municipalities get immunity. Whether you have storm sewer capacity to handle a one-year storm event or a 10-year storm event, that's a legislative decision, and a 75-year storm event was not something that anybody was prepared to handle.
Has this court ever adopted the Lyons test?
The Supreme Court? Not to my knowledge.
Is this a matter, in a sense, of common law?
Yes, I would say so.
And there's policy involved in the development of the common law?
I think the common law, Lyons relied on 89380 and the inclusion of the term agents in that statute to extend governmental immunity to its agents, including contractors. So it's statutory in nature, but the application of the inclusion of contractors in that umbrella of agents is something that...
Did Mr. Shower's business suffer any significant damages?
It's my understanding that it did.
Did he have insurance for all those damages?
I understand that he didn't have insurance.
So the policy question that's implicated here is that this business owner should suffer all of the uninsured damages from this incident because of a superior policy of protecting the contractor and the city. Is that right?
Well, it wasn't just Mr. Showers who suffered damage in this. It was a once-in-75-year rainfall event. There were over 4 inches of rain that fell that day. Everybody suffered. The city suffered. Mr. Showers suffered. And so did his neighbors. There was flooding up and down the street. Mr. Showers didn't, I think as the dissent in the Court of Appeals decision put it, take one for the team. We were all in the same boat. It wasn't a very good boat for anyone to be in. But
that's a different defense than governmental immunity. You need to separate out for me governmental immunity as a defense versus this rainfall was incredible, and it's a 75-year flood situation. I mean, that would apply whether the governmental immunity is in place or not, right? So, I mean, it seems to me, and I'd urge you to think about this, it seems to me like you're trying to say
we have more immunity because there was a flood situation. Immunity should either apply or it doesn't apply. And so those are separate things. I mean, it's unfortunate that there was that bad situation that occurred for all of you, right? But that's not really fundamental to whether there's immunity. Because immunity should apply whether it's a 75-year rainfall or whether it isn't, right?
Sure, and okay. I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
I mentioned the 75-year rainfall to put the backdrop of what was going on in the city at the time, but immunity attaches generally to governments for surface water-related issues, whether it's no matter how much rain they're based on.
What's the public policy reason why Mr. Showers should take one for the team?
I think the public policy reason why is best articulated in Boyle and as adopted by Lyons, but we want to insulate legislative decisions from judicial second guessing. And this contract was designed by the DOT, but they hired somebody else to implement it. The Brown and I think Pember cases have addressed that if the point of contracting something out would be negated if we required these contracts to be prophetic and encyclopedic, we want to enable the government to use any resource, the resources available to them through the expertise of private contractors, but still protect those decisions from judicial second-guessing.
Is this really the DOT's fault?
I don't think that I can say it was anybody's fault. I think that's why I bring up the 75-year storm event. I think that if the fault here, if any, is simply an act of nature.
Well, there's just simply no fault involved, and Mr. Showers has to take the consequences.
Unfortunately, there are situations where you can't blame anybody, and this might be one of them.
So then this is a summary judgment type situation regardless of immunity. Either way, their case should be kicked because this was a bad rainfall and nobody's at fault. It's not an immunity issue at all.
No, it is an immunity issue. And the immunity issue is premised on whether the act should be entitled to immunity. And the act that we're providing immunity here is the capacity of a drainage system. Musson provided a temporary drainage system on the construction site as was required by their contract. That couldn't handle this particular rainfall. It doesn't have to be able to handle this particular rainfall. But the underlying act, the underlying thing that we need to apply immunity to is the capacity of storm systems.
If I can get this correct, and I apologize for having missed some of the argument. I will listen to it on tape. I suppose I should say disc. Anyhow, Showers sued Musset, right? And also sued the city. And you represent the city and the city's insurance company, is that right?
Correct.
And each of you filed cross claims against each other for indemnification, that is Musson and the city. So you're all pointing fingers at each other. Because no one wants to pay, right? Okay. But you're united against Showers. Is that a correct statement of where all the parties are?
Correct. Except I didn't hear the very last part you said.
That although you and Musson have cross claims, because the city would prefer if anyone has to pay that Musson pay, and Musson would prefer if anyone has to pay that the city pay. And West Bend Mutual Insurance Company insures Musson, and the League of Wisconsin Municipalities Mutual Insurance Company insures the city of Oshkosh. So they are in the camp of their insureds, right? And so you may have divided interests against each other, but you're united in interest against Showers. I just am trying to make sure I understand everyone's position.
I think you fairly correctly summed it up. I mean, I am here today obviously representing the city of Oshkosh, but I have found myself in the capacity of defending Musson and what they did or didn't do, because, like I said, we were all in the same boat here. But the city of Oshkosh, summary judgment was granted to Showers' claims against the city of Oshkosh because we didn't have anything to do with this project. We didn't design, implement, plan, nothing. It just
According
happened.
To one of the DOT people, you complained a lot.
I would acknowledge that that's replete in the record. But I
got pretty tired since he's dealing with a sixth-grade group of people.
Well, and I think
or words to that effect, right?
The city.
No, no offense to sixth graders, right? Okay.
The city has political pressures as well, so I guess complaining is inherent in the nature of a complicated project like this.
Right. I've been on that street. It's a very busy street, right? It's a main thoroughfare in Oshkosh, if I'm remembering the right street. It was torn up for a long time.
It's a state highway, and I'm not sure how long the reconstruction project took in 2008. I believe there was a prior reconstruction project as well.
You had a lot of rain in June that year, didn't you? And rain came down on June 8th of that year?
I believe that's correct.
Quite a bit of rain, actually. Were there any consequences to Mr. Showers' property because of that first rain?
I don't believe so, but I'm not positive.
Well, isn't it true that there was water standing in front of his property?
On June the 8th?
Yeah, after
June. I'm not certain of that.
So you wouldn't be able to say whether Mr. Showers complained to Musson and the city about the water standing in front of his property?
No, I wouldn't. I'm not sure whether or not it was, but it was my understanding that he didn't suffer any damage to his basement from any prior rain events. In other words, the capacity of the temporary system wasn't insufficient until we got to this catastrophic event on June 12th.
Okay. Well, were some steps taken after the June 8th rain to deal?
I'm okay to continue?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. The Musson, the DOT, and the city got together and developed a contingency plan. I know that's been referred to as part of the plans and specifications, and I think Mr. Posansky has referred to it as something that was imposed a particular ministerial duty on Musson. I don't believe that's true, but it had rained a lot, the ground was very saturated, and everybody around said, let's get together and see what we can do to alleviate some of this if in the future we have a similar event. So the city let Musson know the drainage basins and recommended locations for pumps and hoses, and there was a working together to do the best everybody could to keep the wrath of Mother Nature from its worst, but can only do so much.
Are there any other questions? If there are no other questions, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Attorney Posansky, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Counselor, if in fact the whole storm sewer system had to be removed because the sanitary sewer, which was also going to be improved, lay underneath it, is that a question then about whether or not Musson was negligent that would be put to a jury if there's no liability?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, I think...
So it's possible that if the jury found that the whole storm sewer had to be taken out above, they could conclude that Musson wasn't negligent, so therefore they wouldn't be liable, even though your client suffered significant damage, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the arguments that have been proffered by the defendants here are perfect arguments for closing arguments to a jury. But these are the arguments they're making are not immunity arguments. Immunity arguments, once again, goes back to the issue, do we have a reasonably precise specification or are they exercising discretion? And in Musson's brief to this court, they make a judicial admission in their brief clearly stating that they had discretion. At page 22 of Musson's brief, they state that the assignment of discretion in construction projects is common and necessary. And they go on to say the discretion afforded Musson under the construction contract at issue here is a regularity under such contracts. Page 17 of their brief, they go on to say, first, the decisions concerning the use of pumps and hoses to maintain temporary drainage is discretionary in nature. They're telling this court that they believe that the decisions that Musson were making were discretionary. So then the issue before this court and what we're asking this court to say is when a contractor is making discretionary decisions, should the law afford them blanket immunity such as the Court of Appeals has given them? Basically, the Court of Appeals says the mere fact that somebody is on the site, walking around and on site, that is sufficient to curtail their discretion and therefore give them immunity. And I tell you that I submit to the court, I think the consequence of this is this. If I'm a DOT and I hear this rule of law that's come down from the Court of Appeals, I don't want any of my DOT people on site because I'm concerned if they're walking around and monitoring the situation but not giving meaningful review and analysis, that in that situation, the contractor, if they are negligent, potentially could have immunity.
Well, on every DOT job throughout the state, any kind of a project they're involved with, they always have someone on site taking notes. It's
absolutely, and I think you, Justice, if I could say on that, I think the difference is though being on site versus the contractor walking up to the DOT official and saying, "I want to do this block by block. Take this back to your office. Think about it and analyze it." And I think what the DOT should have done is what our expert did in this case and figure out. If they would have sat down and said, you know what, if it rains, there might be 117,500 gallons of water that are going to pull up in front of his place. How are we going to get that water out? Well, we'll need pumps. Mr. Kaiser, our expert, said, well, you'll need like 50 pumps to do that. If they went through that analysis and said to Musson, we analyzed this, and we feel in our opinion we're approving this what plan that you're having block by block, after they've done that, then I think the case law forwarded to the federal government that's in the federal cases would say there's potentially immunity if they went through that.
Well, you know, generally, though, what happens if they find out that they've got a job they have to do and doing it needs to be done a particular way, like perhaps it needed to be block by block, which would require expending more money than had been included in the bid on this project for pumping and so forth. Generally, what they do is they talk to the DOT guy and say, we need a change order, right? Isn't that what happens? And then you do a change order so something will be done in a more expensive manner because it becomes apparent to everybody that that's what needs to be done.
I agree 100% with you, and that's what wasn't done here.
Right.
That's exactly. If that would have happened, then I think we have a different case here for immunity. But once again, this is a case, and I want to state to the court, if I may, in the daily diary report of the Department of Transportation, which is in the record, Ryan Schoenhofer says to the in his note, he says, I told Pete, who is in the city of Oshkosh, that I was not sure I could shut them down if the city asked me to. I would have to review that. I also told him that the means and methods and techniques the contractor uses to construct the project are his responsibility, and I am not in the business of directing them how to do their job. At the same time, Pete was in the same meeting as I was when we expressed to Mark Cornelius and Mike R. of Musson that we were concerned how they were going to construct this project and handle the stormwater. We expressed concerns, and they said, meeting Musson, that they were confident they could build this project in stages and handle the water. And what ended up happening in the end, they didn't do it in stages as it was agreed upon, They did it the whole thing at once. They used their discretion. That was not approved by the DOT in any way, shape, or form. Mr. Duda says that it was approved, but there is nothing in this record that shows the DOT approved that. To the contrary, the DOT was actually saying, that's up to them. It's means and methods. The contract talks about means and methods. And to say the contractors get immunity under this circumstance is, I think, going to create a difficult result in the state.
If you should prevail so that defendants have not met the Lyons test and therefore do not have immunity, is that the end so that then you just go back? Do we have to do anything more in reaching a decision here?
Yeah, if the court determines that there is not immunity, then that would end the analysis, no immunity, and then we would be remanded back to the trial court to have a jury trial on this issue where Musson and the city of Oshkosh can raise all the arguments they've been given to the court today about why they believe that the negligence of Musson was a substantial factor in Mr. Schauer's damages. I'd see my time's up, Your Honor.
Any other questions? That concludes your argument. Thank you, counsel. On behalf of the court, I want to thank all the counsel for their arguments today on yet another variation of a theme of government immunity. We've had, this is the second case this term, and these are difficult issues. And I want to thank you for your briefs and your oral argument. That concludes our hearing in 11AP 1158, Showers Appraisals versus Musson Brothers.